Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. You know, if I was going to describe the single worst thing that the government does, that the most damaging thing that the government does, I wouldn't even talk about the war on drugs. Not to say that I don't think that's damaging. It's extremely damaging. It destroys people's lives for no reason. It squanders billions of dollars. It creates violence. It forces a black market. But I don't even think that's the worst thing that the government does. I wouldn't even say that the FDA is the worst thing that the government does, although it's plenty bad. The FDA, which delays life-saving treatments, often to people who are terminally ill, who have nothing to lose, that only have a few weeks left to live, the FDA says, no, you can't try an experimental drug. And often those experimental drugs are later approved and shown to work. I wouldn't even talk about the military, which goes around the world creating enemies for us. I wouldn't talk about the military that creates death and chaos and destruction all over the world, destroying wealth and property and lives. I wouldn't even say that's the worst thing that the government does. Not to say that I think it's good. I think that what the military does right now is heinous. It is immoral in the extreme. It takes the heroism of those who sign up for military service and squanders it in the most immoral way possible. And we see the tragic results. Only just a few months ago, we saw that the rate of military suicides exceeded for the first time in God knows how many years the rate of civilian suicides. But I wouldn't even say that's the worst thing that the government does. If I was going to say what the absolute worst thing that the government does, the most damaging thing that the government does to our country, to the American people, I would say it's the public school system, which has deformed and destroyed education, created generations of people unable to compete in either an international market or even in a local market. I would say it's this education system that's taken education, the most fundamental right of all human beings, and turned it into state indoctrination. I would say it's the education system that takes out important facts, that doesn't even teach students facts that they need to know. And I'm not even just talking about political facts, although it certainly censors those. If you go to a public school, when do you ever hear about what a teacher's union is? But anyone who studies politics knows that the teachers' unions are one of the most influential and most damaging organizations on earth. That they do more to harm this country by driving up taxes, by turning schools on its head, making school a thing that's supposed to benefit teachers instead of a thing that's supposed to benefit students. But there's good news right now. There's actually good news for once on the educational front. Just a couple weeks ago, this bill is just, it's fresh. Nevada signed into law an educational savings accounts bill. Now, it's not a perfect bill. It's not the best thing in the world, but it's a step, and it's a step that shows what the liberty movement is doing. It's a step that shows that all of our activism, that the candidates that we've run that have pledged to shut down the government school system and allow free market schools to actually do what the free market does best, which is to create ingenuity and to create genius, which is the whole goal of education, they signed into law this education bill. And so let's take a look at what this bill says. Let's understand. It's a partial measure. It's not perfect, but it's a step. Parents in Nevada now will have assigned to them what's called an educational savings account. That means they get 90% of what would have been spent on public school. So not 100%. So we're already getting a bit of a cost savings right there. It's already a 10% cost savings. Everybody in Nevada, every parent, every child in Nevada now has this money attached to the child. They can use it. They can't. It's not just they can only use it in a state licensed school, which was the past issue. I mean, oftentimes, you know, the teachers' unions are so influential that private schools have to meet such rigorous standards that they basically gut the efficacy of a private school. My home state in Maryland, if you wanted just a few years ago to hire Bill Gates to teach a computer science class, would have been against the law because he didn't have a bachelor's degree. I mean, we're talking about really ridiculous laws for private schools. But in Nevada, here's what they've done. They're saying that you can spend that money on textbooks, on private school tuition, on tutoring, on whatever you want. And so what they're doing right here is they're creating a market of innovation. And here's what I predict. I predict that in a few years, people won't need 90% of the current cost. They'll just need 80%. Why? Because the private sector will have created better low-cost alternatives the way the private sector always does. Now, it comes as no surprise that we have senators in Nevada, we had Senators Woodhouse and Parks opposing the measure. It's no surprise that we have people opposing it, but it's created, it's gotten through. And that's not just something that happened by itself. That took years of activism. That took years of libertarian candidates running, organizations like Campaign for Liberty putting more and more pressure on the established parties, libertarian candidates for that matter, putting more and more pressure on the established parties. Now let's take a look at what the secondary effects are. I mean, the big primary effect is that now people in Nevada have the option of getting higher quality education for their kids. That's a big improvement. Now, is it completely fair? By no means. People who don't have children in Nevada are still subsidizing other people's children, which in my view is morally absolutely wrong and really unsupportable. But it's an improvement because now it's a 10% reduction. It's not bad. It's not a bad first step. So let's look at some of the secondary effects. One of the primary effect, obviously, better education. But there are some secondary effects as well. The secondary effects are going to be other states will first start to see that this is going to work. They're going to start to see that you have organizations all over the country that don't need $5,000 a year to do education. They can do it in $1,000 a year. For that matter, the private sector has already created options that cost $0,000 a year. You have Khan Academy and Coursera, which students all over the country have known to use and love and rely on. We already have those things. So that $5,000 a year, it's going to go to $4,000. My prediction is if we keep putting pressure, if we keep having libertarians run for office and set a higher standard for the establishment parties, it's going to go to 3,000. It's going to go to 2,000. And eventually people will realize we don't need an educational subsidy at all. The free voluntary market has already given us free education. Now, most of us recognize there's an important little trick that those who depend on government do. And we understand, we've seen it in the military. We understand how the military does it. And here's what it is. The military, the military contractors, the arm, they convince us that going to war is either necessary for our survival, which, you know, a few minutes of research will show that's not really true, or that it's somehow beneficial to us. And this weird part of the mind says, oh, well, maybe if we go to war in Iraq, we'll get some benefit. What benefit have any of us gotten? And we talk about trading blood for oil and opposing that, but we've traded a lot of blood. Have you gotten any oil? I know I haven't gotten any. I haven't gotten a 5-gallon can of gasoline delivered to my door or even a gas card. So what is really going on when we go to war for no good reason? You know, where's the money getting transferred from? It's not getting transferred from Iraq to America, I'll tell you that much. It's getting transferred from American citizens who are forced to pay taxes to American defense contractors who have finagled a way to receive that tax money. When we go to war, the government has to buy tanks. It has to buy tanks from somebody, and that somebody makes a lot of money. When we go to war, when the federal government goes to war, it has to buy a lot of planes. Those planes have to be bought from somebody, and that somebody makes a lot of money. The federal government has to buy bullets, vests, guns, all kinds of equipment, and that money goes to somebody. Somebody's manufacturing those things. And those somebodies who are manufacturing the tanks and the planes and the bullets, they are the ones who benefit from war. And now we see how that works in war. Now the question is, how does that work in education? Now, I know that it's starting to come together. It's intuitive to so many of us, but it's not quite as obvious with education, because we think that people, we don't need to go to war. There's no direct threat that can be addressed by the military right now. But we say, well, we do need to have education. Education we view as a fundamental necessity. And we have teachers' unions and organizations like that that kind of trick that understanding into something else. They say, well, we need to have education. And so, therefore, we need to provide, we, the teachers' unions, need to provide that education. And that right there is exactly the same thing happening, just in the exact same way that defense contractors lobby for war, teachers' unions lobby for education, for educational spending, because that builds the teachers' unions. That supports salaries for good teachers, and it supports salaries for a lot of bad teachers. It supports salaries for, you know, some good textbooks, but also supports a lot of, I mean, money for some good textbooks, but it supports a lot of money for big organizations that get their lobbyists into various school boards to buy those textbooks. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in education, but first, there is literally nothing more important than you can do right now at this point in time in American history than to work to get the government out of education. There's nothing that's going to benefit this generation and future generations than getting the government 100% completely out of education, taking those $5,000 savings account, making them $4,000. In states that don't have anything, any option like that, making sure that they do get those options and then cutting it down. But it's not going to happen just by itself. Legislators in Nevada didn't just do it just because they felt like it. They did it because they were responding to political pressure coming from the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian movement. And if you want to put that kind of pressure on the Republican and Democratic legislators in your state, if you want to shut down this pernicious fake education that the government is forcing all of us to pay for and forcing people to attend, then you need to run for office. You need to run for local office, federal office. You need to run for school board with that central pledge saying that you will do whatever it takes to get the government completely out of education so that America can have the best education on earth. And that is the absolute right of every American, to have the best education on earth. And if you're ready to do that, if you're ready to make that step, if you're ready to run for office and get the government completely out of education, go to lp.org/states and see how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, or see how to run for office yourself as a libertarian. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. And right now we're talking a little bit about this new bill in Nevada that's signed into law. It's Nevada is allowing parents to keep their money in a savings account, the money that would normally be spent on education. They're allowing to keep 90% of that and spend it how they see fit on the education of their choice. Now, this parallel between education and the military, it's so fundamental because educational spending and military spending are our two biggest ticket items. The only thing that comes that's bigger than that is Social Security. But in terms of things where we're spending money on a thing, education and military are the top two spending items. Military, we spend it federally. Education, it's spent at the state level, but if you add it all up, it's not too different. Now, when we go to war, or when we go to military actions, or whatever the other fake name they have for war nowadays is, what do we see? We see that the government finds the most expensive way possible to get the job done. If we wanted to be friends with Iran, if we wanted to turn to more westernized Iran, if we wanted to have a more cultural exchange with Iran, the most logical thing to do would be to eliminate these trade sanctions so that people can trade. And when businesses in America and businesses in Iran are working together, they're both going to work for peace, because peace is good for trade. Peace is good for commerce. Peace is good for the economy. War is good for absolutely nothing. And similarly, just like defense contractors constantly lobby for the most expensive possible way to go to war, the way to go to war that's going to force the government to spend the maximum amount on buying stuff from defense contractors, these are the people that make the tanks and the bombs, in the same way that the defense contractors try to make sure that the government is using the most expensive way to go to war. Not the defense contractors say, hey, why don't we just get rid of these sanctions, because, you know, then we'll have cultural exchange. We'll have people in Iran watching American TV shows and maybe vice versa and getting to know each other and understand each other and realize that most people in both countries are basically decent, basically working hard, basically trying to make money and get ahead in life, to support their families, to provide better education, to provide food and clothing. If we could do that, I mean, that's going to be an effective way, but that's not the way that defense contractors want. Nor do they want the way that uses not too large an arsenal. No, they want the biggest, most expensive arsenal possible, because that means the government's spending the most money on their product. Now, just like defense contractors are doing that, in America, teachers' unions are doing the same thing. They are lobbying constantly to make sure that we use the single most expensive and coincidentally least efficient and least effective, but certainly the most expensive possible form of education that exists anywhere. When you think about what is the easiest thing to automate, what is the easiest thing in education to automate? What's the simplest thing that we can make automatic? It's obviously lecture. It's obviously a presentation. I mean, you can record a presentation and play it 10,000 times. algebra doesn't change that much. Nice thing about recordings is you can replay them. And a student that doesn't really get something can play it 50 times. And a student that just gets everything really easy can just flow through it one time. We know that's the simplest and most obvious thing to automate. And yet, in every state, year after year, teachers fight that automation. Teachers' unions, I should say, fight that automation. Individual teachers don't fight it at all. Individual teachers have started using it because many individual teachers actually are interested in education. Imagine that. But the teachers' unions fight that. If we say, why don't we just record some of these lectures and reduce the staff accordingly, they're up in arms. Now, here's the thing. The free market has already realized this advantage. That's what Khan Academy is. That's all Khan Academy is. It's recorded lectures. It's information that's been re-presented, re-recorded, so you can watch it 5,000 times if you need to. And millions of students all over the country that rely on Khan Academy because their schools are so incompetent have proven that this method works. But we're not going to get that cost savings. We're not going to get that real cost savings. Not until we create the incentive for it. And I don't mean the financial incentive. The financial incentive is here right now. We need to create the political incentive for it. Because right now, any legislator in the entire country has a choice. They can support this ridiculous, backwards, ineffective way of doing education, this super expensive and super ineffective way of doing education, this public school system that has made America the laughingstock of the world when it comes to education. They can support that, and if they do that, they're going to get the support of the teachers' unions. And that's a very powerful lobby. In fact, it's arguably one of the most powerful lobbies in the country. Public school teachers' unions are one of the most influential lobbies in the country. Because they don't just give money, no, they can also give votes. And teachers routinely are told by their union representatives who to vote for. And they'll often vote essentially as a block. And so if we want to see that change, we need to give those legislators the right incentive. The right incentive to downsize spending, wasteful, unnecessary, redundant spending on public schools, and instead allow people to spend their money on education that works, or to spend no money at all, because we already have free education that works. We already have Khan Academy. This is not some utopian dream. It's here right now. We have better free education right now. If you have a computer, you have better free education than you can get in a public school, and that's an absolute fact. So how do we create that political incentive? Well, one way to not do it is to just keep on voting for Democrats and Republicans all the time. Because if you keep voting for them, they'll say, yeah, I guess these regular, ordinary, logical people seem happy. And now the only thing I need to do next is just kind of get the support of the teachers' unions. But what if you don't? What if you start voting for libertarian candidates who have been so vocal about getting the government completely out of education? Well, let's see what happens then. A former candidate for Maryland governor once said, not all politicians are smart, but they can all count. They can all count how many votes they receive, and they can count how many votes the libertarian candidate receives. And when you vote for them, when you vote for a Democrat or a Republican candidate, you're just telling them, keep on doing that. Keep on doing what you're doing. Everything you're doing is fine. I'm rewarding you with my vote, and I'm voting for you because I support what you're doing. But if you vote for the libertarian candidate, well, now you put them in a difficult situation, because now they actually have to earn your vote. And how do they earn your vote? By reducing spending on education, fake education, public school education, nonsense education. They earn your vote by spending less on the military. They earn your vote by if they're an executive candidate, by using their power of the pardon to pardon those that we all know have no business in jail. But the only way that's going to happen, that's not going to happen if you keep rewarding them for bad behavior. That's only going to happen if you take that vote away. If you tell them, listen, If you don't downsize government, if you don't sponsor legislation to downsize government, if you don't fight tooth and nail to get the government out of education, to get the government out of healthcare, to get the government out of food and agriculture, if you don't fight tooth and nail to do that, then you got to let them know. You got to tell them, if you don't fight tooth and nail to do that, then I'm not going to vote for you. And I'm not going to vote for anybody in your entire party. I'm not going to vote for your candidates for president. I'm not going to vote for your candidates for city council. I'm not going to vote for your candidates for state legislature or Congress. I'm not going to vote for a single candidate from your party until you individually fight tooth and nail to downsize government. And I'll tell you this, Republicans and Democrats are run by their Republican and Democratic committees. And when the committee starts to see more and more of us pledging that we're not going to vote for a single one of them until they massively downsize government, until they do whatever it takes to downsize government, when they get that message, I guarantee you that they will downsize government. I guarantee you they will use every clean and dirty trick in the book to downsize government. But what you can do that's even more powerful than voting, there's only one thing in the world more powerful than voting, and that's running for office. Because if they see 5,000 libertarians running for office, if they see 10,000 libertarians running for office, I guarantee you they're going to start to change their ways. They're going to start to do whatever it takes to win back the vote of people who want less government. And if you're ready to put that kind of pressure on them, if you're ready to really make sure that they have no choice but to cut government, go to lp.org/states. Look up your state, contact your state chair, and ask that person, what do I need to do to run for office? What do I need to do to make the single biggest contribution I can possibly make to the cause of liberty? But that first step is up to you, lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We've talked about what we want Republicans and Democrats to do. We know we want them to downsize government, and we know we have an inkling that political pressure is the way to do it. But here's the thing that they don't want you to know. It's actually not that hard to downsize government. It's actually harder, legally speaking, to grow government than it is to downsize government. In order to grow government, you need to have both parties working together. If to downsize government, you just need either the president or the House or the Senate. You don't need everyone working together. To grow government, Congress needs to pass a bill to add something. The president needs to sign it into law. But either the president or Congress, all by themselves, can shrink government. In fact, in most states, either the governor all by him or herself, or the legislature all by itself, can shrink government. It's easier to shrink than to grow government. So now the question is, how do we actually do that? I mean, what are the mechanics of it? Congress has the ability to defund. It's kind of like if someone says, hey, Dad, can I go watch a movie? And Dad says, sure, but I'm not going to give you any money for it. Well, it's kind of like the basically the same thing as saying no. And Congress has the same ability. There can be a law passed, and Congress just say, well, we're not going to give you any money to do what you want. You can pass all the laws you want, but there's no money for it. Now, Congress has refused to use this technique. And the only reason they refused to use this technique is because they didn't have to. And why didn't they have to? Because too many people kept voting for them despite their doing what we didn't want. All of us who strongly opposed and continue to oppose Obamacare, who opposed and continue to oppose Bush's Medicare expansion, who opposed and continue to oppose Medicare, government-run Medicare, government-run Medicaid, who continue to realize that we need to get the government out of medicine entirely. We knew what we wanted. We knew that we wanted that Republican Congress, that supposedly fiscally conservative Congress, to use their power to defund Obamacare. And they could have. All they had to do is say, yeah, we will not pass any funding for Obamacare. You can pass into law all day long, but you have to do it without any money. And honestly, if Obamacare didn't cost anything, yeah, it would be kind of bad, but it wouldn't really be that bad. It would still infringe on our right to choose healthcare as we see fit. It would still maybe add burdensome regulation. But you know what? Congress could have also completely cut the funds for enforcing those regulations. And then those regulations would just be sitting there on pieces of paper, well ignored by those who are exercising their free and fundamental right to use and choose the healthcare of their choice. But Congress didn't do that. And do you know why Congress didn't do that? Because we, so many Americans, kept voting for Republicans and Democrats. And Republicans and Democrats realized that they didn't really need to make any concessions. They had already gotten the thing that they wanted. They'd already gotten the votes. So why negotiate? Why offer anything when you've already gotten everything? Here's what we should have done. Here's what everybody should have done. Here's what I did, and here's what I strongly encourage every single person to do. Vote for the Libertarian candidate. Because when you vote for the Libertarian candidate, and the Republicans see that, or the Democrats see it, then they have no choice but to engage in Libertarian behaviors. They might not change their party stripes, but at least they can change some of those behaviors. If enough people had voted Libertarian, the Republicans, in desperation, would have had no choice but to say, listen, if we want to ever keep any kind of control, any legitimacy or political power, we need to defund Obamacare. And they would have. And we can still make them do it. We can make them do it anytime. It's not like a one-shot thing. Obamacare can be, any part of government can be defunded at any time. But it requires incentive. Now, if you want to give them that incentive, you have to vote Libertarian. You can't give Republicans an incentive by voting Republican. You can't give Democrats an incentive by voting Democrat. If you donate money to the Republican Party and you vote for the Republican Party, then they're going to take that as they've already gotten what they want from you. They've already gotten it, and now there's no reason for them to act like decent people. What you can do is make your demands clear. Don't just say you want there to be them to do better action. Say, listen, if you want my vote, that's fine. I'm happy to vote for you after you vote to defund Obamacare. And if you're talking to executives, talking to governors and presidents, if you're talking to their campaign, say, listen, I would love to vote for you. after you pardon people who are in prison for nonviolent offenses. Just a few weeks ago, the founder and the creator of the Silk Road, and the Silk Road, as you know, is a website, kind of like an eBay that doesn't have any restrictions. It's a total free market. People can use whatever they want. They can buy and sell whatever they want on the Silk Road, or at least they could before the government shut it down. And now the founder, Ross William Ulbricht, the founder, and we're talking about a young genius, an entrepreneur, a technological innovator, somebody who could add so much to our economy. We're not talking about some just deadbeat that has that adds nothing or subtracts nothing. We're talking about somebody we're talking about a brilliant guy, a young, hardworking, brilliant guy who makes this thing, this website. He doesn't even make it for the money. He makes it because he thinks this is a good thing to bring to people. Is now in jail for life. Let's talk about the first thing, the small thing. Let's talk about the small thing. That means $60,000 a year is being taken out of the economy to destroy somebody's lives. That's $60,000 that people could have kept, spent on better education, spent on better healthcare, spent on all kinds of things. I'll just put it in the savings account or use it to pay down the national debt. It could be used for anything. But instead, we're using it to destroy the life of a young, hardworking, brilliant, technologically innovating entrepreneur. And what happens to him now? His life is being... So that's a small thing. We're spending all that money. But look at the other big thing. Look at this huge loss. We have somebody who's this... I mean, we're talking about the next eBay. We're talking about the next Mark Zuckerberg. We're talking about the next Bill Gates rotting in a prison for life just so the federal government can prove a point. Did he even buy or sell any drugs? No, he didn't even buy or sell any drugs. Not that that should make any difference, but he didn't. Did he intimidate people? Did he engage in violence like Mexican cartels or American SWAT teams? No, he didn't do that. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't try to trick kids into smoking weed or anything like that. He didn't use peer pressure. He just made an online marketplace. He made a better online marketplace. And now we're left without his past innovations. We're left without all of his future innovations, those innovations that could have created so many jobs. Because as we all know, companies like eBay and Amazon.com, they're not just websites, they're job factories. There's so many thousands of people that work for companies like Amazon and Google and all these places. I mean, that's jobs that we just literally, we took Ross Ulbricht. We took all of his innovations. We took all the jobs that he would have created. We took all of that. We took all of that wealth. We took all the education of the people who would have worked for him. We took all that, their college tuitions of their kids. We took all the healthcare that they would have bought. We took all the companies that they might have supported. We took all the companies that, inspired by his example, those people might have started. We took all of that and we locked it up in a prison cell for no reason. We locked up somebody that hurt no one, that would have helped thousands of people, and we put him in prison. And when I say we, I am saying we, not just the federal government, because we did that. Anytime that we let the federal government take our money and use it for something like this, we are complicit in that. And it's time for all of us to stop being complicit in that, to stop playing along with that ridiculous game. And the first person that needs to stop doing that is every single executive in this country. Every single governor and the president needs to stop doing that. And we need to hold them accountable. Because I'll tell you this, anytime that you vote for any governor or any president of any party, including the Libertarian Party, who will not use his pardon to let someone like that out of prison, to let someone like that and all of the jobs and all of the innovation that he's going to create, if that person is not going to pledge to do that, and if he's not going to do that the second he gets into office and you vote for that person, then you are complicit. But you don't have to be. There is no reason why any of us has to be. All we need to do to turn this around is to let every single governor campaign know that our price, that if you want our votes, the price is simple. Take that power of pardon and pardon every single nonviolent drug non-criminal in prison and pardon them the second you get into office. And we can start with Ross Ulbricht, but we don't need to end there. We can continue that to people like Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden. We need to make sure that whoever we support, that anybody that gets your vote is meeting that criteria, that if you're voting for president or if you're voting for governor, you have one question you need to ask, and that is, will you stop? Will you, candidate, stop taking my money to destroy people's lives? Will you use that power of pardon to set free the people that have no business in prison, to set free all the innovations and all the jobs that they might have created, to set free all, to stop the pain and suffering being caused both to them and to their loved ones? Will you do that? Because if you won't sign your paper, if you won't sign your name to a piece of paper that says every single one of those people gets out of jail, then you let that candidate know that you won't sign your name to a ballot that supports that person or to anybody else in that person's party. Now, voting is powerful, but as we know, there's only one more thing more powerful than voting, and that's running for office. Running for office as a libertarian, every single time someone does that, that lets Democrats and Republicans know that they're on thin ice. It lets them know that they have absolutely no choice but to do what we want or to go out of business. To let people out of jail that have no business being in jail, or to shut down their party. And if you're ready to do that, you need to go to lp.org/states. You need to contact the state chair and say, listen, I'm ready to make the biggest contribution I possibly can to the cause of liberty. I'm ready to run for office and let the Democrats and Republicans know that they're on thin ice. I'm ready to run for office to make sure that the young entrepreneurs and innovators that are in jail for no reason, and for that matter, anyone in jail for no reason. Because you shouldn't have to be a brilliant entrepreneur to be able to be free in America. So any person in jail for no reason, you got to set that person free. And that's the way to do it. It's running for office. There is nothing that you can possibly do that's more effective. But the first step is going to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on Earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. There has been a rash in America of hardworking, intelligent people who are doing so many good things being sentenced to prison. We can talk about Ross. We talked about Ross Ulbricht, but what about that most famous one? Talking about Edward Snowden, the person who, for me at least, defines what real courage is. Somebody that says, listen, what's going on right here is wrong. And I know for a fact that if I let this information out, I'm going to be on the run for the rest of my life. That's someone who stands up and he sacrifices his entire livelihood to make sure that the American people get information that they deserve, to make sure that people understand that we learn what the government was doing or is doing, hasn't even stopped doing, which is these mass surveillance of all Americans. Now, I believe, and I think many of you believe, that Edward Snowden deserves a pardon, and Edward Snowden deserves a medal too, for that matter. And now the question is, which candidates for president will give him that pardon? Because Snowden can't be pardoned just by a governor. No, he needs a presidential pardon. And if you want to reward the person that told you the truth, the person that sacrificed his entire livelihood, that turned away a comfortable life. I mean, yeah, well-paying, good, nice-paying job. He's a young guy. He's working in an area that's interesting. He turns that away, decides that he's going to spend his life in hiding in order to help you. He sacrificed for you and for me. He did something that's so courageous. You know, I like to think that in that position, I would do the same thing. But honestly, I've never been in that position. I've never been in a position that vertiginously scary, where your only choices are to do what you know is right and to sacrifice your entire livelihood. But that's what Edward Snowden did. He sat there, he looked at this information, and he said, I'm going to live once. And in that life, by God, I'm going to do the right thing. And it might make the rest of my life on this earth really, really difficult. But I'm going to do that for all the American people who deserve to know this. He didn't do it for himself, because he already knew it. He already had the information, obviously. He did it for you and he did it for me. And the question is this, how are we going to pay him back for that sacrifice, for being willing to make that kind of sacrifice? How will we pay him back? I mean, how can you pay somebody back for something like that? Well, the first thing that we can make sure that his work wasn't in vain, that he didn't just sacrifice for no reason. And how do we do that? We make sure, and we let the Republicans and the Democrats know that if they won't defund the warrantless surveillance portion of the NSA's budget, if they won't just defund that entirely, if they won't shut it down, then you're not going to vote for them, and you're not going to vote for anybody in their party. That the price for your vote is using that power of defunding, the power to defund, that congressional power to defund, that's your price for vote, that they have to use it and they have to shut down that entire thing. They have to make sure that this noble sacrifice didn't happen for just no reason at all. And that's the first way that we can repay Edward Snowden, but that's not enough. Someone makes a sacrifice like that, that's not enough. It's not enough to just make, of course, it's good to make statues and paintings and portraits and all the various types of low and high art that's going on all over the world right now, commemorating his courageousness, his courage. But that's not enough. What we need to do is to say, listen, Edward Snowden, you did one of the most noble things that anyone in American history has ever done, and now we're ready to welcome you home. And the only way that that's going to happen is with a presidential pardon. Nothing else is going to do it. A presidential pardon is what will make that happen. 2016, you're going to have a lot of people, you're going to hear a lot of people using the word libertarian. It's a popular idea. And more people are realizing the government's been kind of full of it the whole time. But using that word is easy. Doing the actions that it requires is an entirely different thing. You know, I heard Edward Snowden speak this year at Students for Liberty, the Students for Liberty conference in Washington, D.C., where libertarian students from all over the country get together. Now, obviously, he was there via live telecast. I mean, he wasn't crazy enough to actually walk into D.C. physically and get immediately arrested, but he was there via live telecast. And I cannot tell you how inspiring that was. To see, just honestly, just to hear him speak, just if he just said, you know, just read a grocery list, that would have been inspiring enough. But no, the words that he said when he talked about the ideas of civic duty and civic responsibility coming from someone like that, it was one of the most inspiring moments of my entire life. And if we want to bring someone like that back home, it's got to be with a presidential pardon. So here's the thing. Edward Snowden, maybe he didn't use the word libertarian all day long, but he definitely engaged in one of the most libertarian actions I have ever seen in my entire life. And we're going to have a lot of candidates who are doing the reverse. They're going to be using the word libertarian, but not doing any libertarian actions of any kind. And so you need to ask them the question. That when you hear somebody saying, I'm a libertarian Republican, or I'm a libertarian Democrat, or I'm a libertarian leaning this, or libertarian leaning that, or hell, somebody saying I'm a libertarian candidate from the Libertarian Party, you need to ask them this question. Ask him or her the following question. Will you pardon Edward Snowden? Because if the answer to that is no, that person does not deserve your vote. I don't care what party that person's from. I don't care if that person is the most, has been in the Libertarian Party since the beginning of the founding of the Libertarian Party. I don't care one bit who that person is. Because if that person will not do that, that person does not deserve your vote. So you need to make that really clear. And you need to ask that question. And when they politically dodge the question, ask it again. And when they find some other snaky way to get around it, ask it again. And ask it and ask it and ask it until you get a yes or until you get a no. And then you'll know where you stand and you'll know what you need to do. And if you're ready to make that happen, if you're ready to get involved in the only party and the only organization that's going to put the right political pressure to make sure that whoever's elected next for president, that part of his price for being elected, one of the absolute promises he will have to make and keep if he's going to be elected, is pardoning Edward Snowden, then you need to put the pressure on them. And the way to put that pressure is running for office as a Libertarian Party candidate. And if you want to make that happen, you go to lp.org/states and see how you can get involved in a Libertarian campaign in your state or see how you can run for office. Right now, we have heroes sitting in prison, and we have heroes that are on the run because they served the country that they loved, that they still continue to love, that they still continue to fight for. Because I'll tell you one thing, having seen Snowden speak, I know he is still fighting for American values, for American liberties, even though the American government has turned its back on him and kicked him out and forced him to live on the run. And if you're ready to change that, go to lp.org/states and get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. And that's the only way we're going to get the kind of justice for the people, for these people that they deserve. That's the only way we're going to get the government completely out of education and healthcare. That's the only way we're going to make sure that freedom and responsibility are the guiding forces that bring America into a new golden age. And that first step, lp.org/states. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You.
Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.